The Fed's $2.8 trillion stimulus program is understandably misunderstood.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. It has a profound effect on our jobs, our businesses, our savings. But a new Reuters survey finds that three-quarters of Americans don't understand the basic principle of the Federal Reserve's extraordinary stimulus program. That may be understandable given its turgid name, quantitative easing, and given that many financial professionals even disagree over how it really works. No, it's not about manipulating the currency or interest rates directly, as so many people guessed in the survey. David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds, is here to help us with this. Morning, Dr. Kelly.
Good morning.
The short answer, right, is that quantitative easing is about the Fed buying bonds, but it's not unrelated to interest rates.
No, I mean, the reason they're buying the bonds is to hold long-term interest rates down. And what the public really cares about, of course, are things like long-term interest rates, mortgage rates. And I think people do recognize that the actions of the Federal Reserve have been holding long-term interest rates down.
They've been holding long-term interest rates down, which brings us mortgage rates, car loan rates, credit card rates that would have almost seemed like science fiction to our elders.
Well, that's right. I think this is very important in the context of what they're going to do today, because we think that they are going to begin to back off this bond buying program, and that will allow long-term interest rates to move up some more. But, you know, if you've got a 4.5% mortgage, that's hardly a high rate by any historical standard. These higher rates will cause people to pause a little bit in terms of thinking about buying a new house or buying a new car. But ultimately, they'll see that these still are pretty good rates, and I don't think it's going to cause business activity to flag here.
This morning, we learned that housing starts in August was up 0.9%, but it says here worse than expected.
But you've got to sort of break this down. We saw some weakness in multifamily starts, but the most important number in that report is something called single-family building permits. And that number was actually the highest since May of 2008. If you look at the increase in single-family building permits, look at the fact that vehicle sales are the highest since the end of 2007, the most cyclical sectors of this economy are actually looking pretty healthy right now.
David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist, J.P. Morgan Funds, thank you.
Anytime.
Education Secretary Arne Duncan is expected to sit down with some powerful CEOs today at the Business Roundtable's quarterly meeting. On the agenda, new education standards called the Common Core. With the standards under attack by some conservatives, businesses are launching a PR campaign in their defense. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
One of the biggest boosters of the Common Core is ExxonMobil. Its CEO wrote an op-ed this month in the Wall Street Journal, and the company has run this ad on TV.
45 states have joined together to ensure consistent academic standards across America.
The standards were crafted by governors and state education officials, but pushed by the Obama administration. So Tea Party conservatives have mounted a campaign against what they call a federal intrusion. The Business Roundtable is planning its own ads to fight back. One of its member companies is trying a more grassroots approach, holding forums for employees to explain the Common Core. Carlos Contreras is U.S. Director of Education for Intel.
The polling that we've done as part of these forums indicate that about 50% of the parents just don't know.
Contreras says when they come into these sessions, about 27% of employees approve of the standards. When they leave, it's closer to 80%. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Entrepreneurs from India and China account for a third of tech startups founded by immigrants in California's Silicon Valley. But as Alexandra Starr reports, there's another group making inroads there, Latinos.
Latinos have long been the largest immigrant group in the United States, but they weren't much of a presence in the tech sector. Vivek Wadhwa, a fellow at Stanford Law School, says that's changing.
I've seen a significant growth in the Latin American population in Silicon Valley.
Part of it is that there are more Latin American role models. Mike Krieger, a co-founder of Instagram, is from Brazil. And there are other tech entrepreneurs, like Luis Arbulu. He's from Peru. After working at Google, he founded Hattery, a venture investment firm in San Francisco.
A lot of us have been featured in press in Peru, in Argentina, in Brazil. So when people come to Silicon Valley, they already know who we are, and they seek us out that way.
One person they hit up frequently is Wences Casares. He's CEO of Lemon Wallet. It produces an iPhone app that essentially allows you to digitize your wallet. Casares is from Argentina. He sold his first tech company for $750 million when he was just 27 years old. He says that's inspired other Latin American entrepreneurs.
In a way, what they're thinking is, you know, it's just like me. I mean, it's no better in many ways or has no particular advantage. I can do this.
All these ambitious newcomers in Silicon Valley? Vivek Wadhwa says they help breed innovation.
The magic in Silicon Valley is that you have people from all over the world mentoring each other, helping each other, challenging each other.
And potentially expanding the market reach of the U.S. tech sector. After all, economies in Brazil, Mexico, and Peru are growing.
The people coming here from Latin America teach the natives about the opportunities in Latin America.
And that can help U.S. businesses capitalize on growing opportunities down south. In Palo Alto, I'm Alexandra Starr for Marketplace.
And news that Starbucks CEO doesn't want firearms in his coffee shops or in outdoor seating areas. In a letter on the Starbucks website today, CEO Howard Schultz says guns are not welcome, but it's not a formal ban since he doesn't want his employees getting into it with customers over this. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.